speaking with Lynn Maximuk, who is the director of the Central Region for the National Weather Service. And Lynn, let me start off with asking you kind of an explanation of the report that was released today and that was discussed in that conference call and the survey itself. What was done and why?
Okay, well, every time we have a significant weather or water event, one of the things we want to do is we want to learn from it, and we want to find out what we did good and where we could find room for improvement. And quite obviously, the Joplin tornado was the biggest killer tornado in many years. And with the fact that the Weather Service did an actually really good job on issuing the warnings, we wanted to find out what was behind the rest of the story. Why were so many people killed and injured? So we do these service assessments, again, whenever there is a significant weather and water event, just to look at how was the service that we provided, where are ways that we can improve it. As a matter of fact, we currently have a service assessment going on for the Missouri River flooding, and that encompasses all the way from up in Montana and North Dakota down to St. Louis, the entire length of the Missouri River. And I've got a team out working on that right now just to see how we did in that forecast and warning aspect as well.
Okay, and so obviously this is not the first time that you've done a survey like this.
No, we do surveys quite frequently. There's one coming out for the tornadoes that hit Alabama earlier this year. There was a national service assessment on that. So I've been in the Weather Service for 39 years, and we've been doing them for pretty much all that time.
The tornado in Alabama may be a good example to kind of illustrate. How do you decide when to go back and do that survey? Because the length of time after the event varies, doesn't it?
Yes. Well, one thing that we try to do with the survey with the surveys is, first of all, we look at the impacts, and we look at if there is a significant impact, there's things to be learned there, and then we try to get into the areas where the events occur. Probably you don't want to get there too early because people are still in too much of an uproar, but you don't want to let too much time go because people's memories start to fade. So we try to get in there in, you know, the 3 to 10 day span after the event to gather all of our data. And then it normally takes multiple days or even weeks to go through all that data and come up with findings and recommendations.
Okay. Because, again, these have been done before in different events and different occasions, let me ask you, did you learn anything or hear anything in Joplin that you hadn't heard or learned before?
We heard a few variations on things that we've heard before. One of the challenges that we have is to get the findings and recommendations funded and implemented. And, funding is a challenge, especially in dealing with government services now with our budgets the way they are, that's a challenge. And then the other challenge is to people's memories are very short after these types of events. And if movement isn't pulled together right away through the very many players that are in all of these events, once those memories start to fade, it's tough to get the initiative to get people to respond to them.
And that is really one of the biggest things that you look at is how did people respond and how can we improve upon that response in future events, right?
Right. The tornado assessment, service assessment that we did for Joplin was a little bit different than the ones that we normally do, because this one, when we looked at it, it was a relatively confined event to just one particular area. And we had a very good read on how our service, our actual warning and forecast service was, and it was outstanding in this event. So what we wanted to look at is one of the things we're trying to do is we're trying to create a weather-ready nation where people know what the weather's potential is, what it can do, and how they can protect themselves and their property from it, and also enhance the economy of the country. So when we looked at this and we said, we had some really good forecasts and warnings out, why did so many people die? So we put more of a slant away from the science of the warning aspects on this because of the job we did, and we turned it into the social science and the communications methodology, and then took a look at the entire weather enterprise, which includes the federal government weather agencies, private weather companies, media people, television and radio, as well as the emergency management community.
And are you finding those things much harder to quantify than the science aspect of it? Because now you're trying to deal with human perception and human understanding.
Yes, the science aspect of weather forecast and warning, you know, it's still a challenge, but it's something that's more or less black or white. When you get into communication, and I think, you know, when people look around, one of the most difficult tasks that they face every day in life is communication. Just the way things are said, different strategies for communicating that message, it's really difficult. And for the past several years, the Weather Service has really been focused into the scientific aspect of our world. And as we get changes in the information technology world, social media and things like that, we're finding that we're having to engage people that are experts in that regard, because even if we have the most accurate and best forecast information available, if we can't adequately communicate it to the people that need it, we're not completing our job.
The social science aspect of that, then, I think is maybe the most interesting, most fascinating aspect of these surveys to me. From the feedback that you got, and I know there was at least one social scientist that took part in this in Joplin, but just in these surveys as a whole, what are you learning from those social scientists that may play into changing the way the Weather Service and the emergency managers and the media, everybody that you work with, how you operate?
Well, from the social scientists, with them working side by side with them and reviewing these events, what we're finding out is we've got to look at more effective ways of communicating the message. We're still pretty much based in the olden days where you sent out teletypes, and now we've expanded into the web. And, you know, anybody who's under 25 knows that even the web is falling behind when you have Facebook and Twitter and other social media things where, you know, even email isn't something that you use right away now. So we're using those people who actually study that and find out how to use that. And we're looking at what we need to do to translate our technical information into formats and different mechanisms that we can get it into these social networking sites, and also so that we can get the information communicated with respect to impacts. For years and years, we've been focused on phenomena, like a thunderstorm. But a thunderstorm with 60-mile-an-hour winds is way different than a thunderstorm with 110-mile-an-hour winds. So how do we effectively communicate those impacts? Because the thing that we're finding with people is they need a source of reliable, unbiased information, and then they need a way to relate how it impacts them and a cognizant of that threat before they'll take any action.
I think it's a good illustration of what we're talking about to me. If we think back 10 or 15 years ago when people were clamoring for there to be longer periods of time between when a tornado warning was issued and when the storm actually hit, we wanted a greater amount of time. And now, after some events and the reports that I'm reading, and you're probably seeing the same stuff I am, and I think Joplin was one of them, where people were saying the warning was issued too early. It was issued so far in advance that by the time the storm got here, I was no longer paying attention to it. Are you hearing that?
We hear a mixed signal on what's the exact warning time. And I think what we look at is giving lead times on warnings, whether it be for a flood or a tornado or a winter storm. I think that we can't come right out and say that there's too long a warning time. Obviously, there's too short a warning time if you don't have but a few seconds to get ready. But there's different segments in our constituency that have different requirements. Like for me in my house, I probably only need 10 or 15 minutes to find out about a tornado because I'm going to go down the basement or I'm going to head off to a shelter somewhere. But if I'm an emergency manager who has to plan, should I be pre-positioning ambulances and getting fire trucks out of fire stations so they don't get all destroyed, they need a much longer lead time to react to that. So I think what we've got to watch is we've got to look at the fine balance between what part of our partner and customer base we're trying to get that information to.
At the IWT that I was at in Pleasant Hill a couple of years ago, and I'm not sure that I remember the gentleman's name. I'll look and see if I can pull it up here while we're talking. But there was a social scientist who discussed this topic, and he gave an explanation of a warning the way he thought it ought to be read. I think it was Jeff Lazo, but I'm not sure if that's the right guy.
Yeah, it probably was.
And he gave the example that he gave was based around a landslide in California, a mudslide landslide in California. And this was very long, and the biggest focus of it was command words. Do this, do this, do this. It wasn't, well, the tornado is confirmed, or so on and so forth. It was simply telling people what to do. when I was at Crest, we started focusing more on doing that when we were on the air. And, you know, of course, it's hard to know how much of an effect that was doing, that was having. But what I'm getting at is, I remember talking about this even 2-3 years ago, and then I'm hearing the results out of this study from Joplin today. It seems to me that we're still hearing the same kind of things coming back from people. So I guess I'm asking, what are we going to start making some changes? What, you know, I guess the question is still, what changes are those going to be, though, isn't it?
Right. Well, one of the things we're looking at with that comes out of these service assessments is several times you get the same type of a recommendation coming out, and we've been slow to react in implementing them for a myriad of reasons. I think, you know, kind of with us going off the one thing that we're finding, and we look at all the weather that's occurred in the past year, we've had a very, very extreme year in weather, and overall, the actual science and the warning and forecasting has been very, very good, yet we're getting the biggest financial and human loss of life that we've had in several years. So what we're doing is we're redoubling our efforts to figure out how to mitigate that, how to reduce those losses. And what we're going to do is part of our Weather Ready Nation, and what we're going to look at is we're going to try to identify the most high impact events or recommendations that we can do, and then test them. And, you know, we're kind of adapting a philosophy. We want to build a little, test a little, and then field a little. So as a result of this Joplin report, there were several recommendations that came out of there, but we're focusing in on two of them that we think we can have a pretty high impact at a relatively little cost and do in a quick period of time. And the two recommendations we're going to focus on is one is the integrated warning teams. And really what an integrated warning team is taking a look at the weather enterprise in any community. And that weather enterprise is comprised of federal meteorologists and hydrologists, private companies, the media, and the emergency managers. And what we want to do is we want to start to focus, probably starting out in the major metropolitan areas where we have the biggest bang for the buck, and bring those groups together to talk about how they can work as a team to help get better response to warnings when they're issued. So that's something that we're going to really focus on this year. And in my region, in the central region, which encompasses 14 states from Michigan all the way over to North Dakota, we normally do about 4 of these a year, and next year we're going to try to expand that and then spread it to other parts of the country. So that's one step in strengthening our Weather Ready Nation to get that response team in sync when they respond to these warnings. The next thing we're going to do is we're going to take a look at, can we make changes to our warning messages and our distribution systems to get people to react and to identify the threat to them personally a little bit better. So we're going to try to run a pilot in an area of the country this year where we're going to look at modifying the warning message to try to give people a little bit of a differentiation between the different levels of weather that's coming at them. So a severe thunderstorm warning won't be a severe thunderstorm warning as a severe thunderstorm warning. There'll be a way that we'll be able to identify, you know, hey, this is a run-of-the-mill severe thunderstorm. Go in the house so you don't get wet. This is one that's going to blow a little bit harder, so you probably want to go inside. And then this one's going to have winds around 100 miles an hour, so you might want to get in the basement. So we're going to identify an area of the country to set a pilot program for this up. And I would guess that based upon it coming out of Joplin, it's probably going to be in the Missouri area here somewhere. And then we're going to get a team of experts that are going to work with social scientists, emergency managers, and weather service people to determine what is the best way to stratify these warnings to have an increasing alerting feature to them.
Okay, and I think you said this year, but do you know specifically when or where? I guess you don't know specifically where yet, but when that's going to happen?
Our goal is to have that in effect by March 1st for next severe weather season. So that's very, very rapid. We're trying to get the team formed right now and kind of get the plan in effect by December, because it's going to take working in partnership with vendors in the private meteorology world that provide the information to TV and radio stations to look at their coding and that. It's also going to take an education process in the pilot area where we're going to have to go out and teach our media, emergency managers, and then have a public education campaign as to these are the differences, and this is what this type of a message means. So it's a really ambitious goal, but I'm pretty optimistic that we can get a pilot up and running by next severe weather season.
Okay. And obviously efforts like this are going to continue until you get it right. Is that the idea?
Right. The key to this is one thing that in the National Weather Service we take great pride in is responding to our customers' and partners' requirements. So while we're going to run a pilot, you know, I would say that probably whatever we throw out there the first time, there's probably a 90% chance we're going to modify it in response to the people that are actually using that information.
And you touched on this before, but already at the heart of this is the fact that you're fighting up against a limited budget and one that is projected to become even smaller. And I'll tell you, where I came from in Moberly, we talked about the weather warning radios on the call earlier today. Moberly is one town that is underserved by those. It's kind of situated between four towers where the signal in the town is very weak, especially during events of severe weather, and there's just no funding to expand that system. Is there any thought, whether it be about weather radios or any other system, how you're going to work within the budget you've got to get that to better get that warning out to people in places like that?
Well, broadcasting our warnings and alerting people is our primary focus, and weather radio, no weather radio, or all hazards weather radio, is a feature that we developed several years ago, and it was very, very useful. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to take a look at, you know, expanding the number of towers and broadcasts is a very costly proposition. So what we're exploring is we're trying to look outside the box and leave no stone unturned. And what we're trying to do is develop partnerships with all the different mobile communication mechanisms that are out there, which could be cable television networks, it could be radio television, cell phones. Now I just got a Galaxy Pad the other day. That's the greatest thing I've gotten in many years. So how can we get that information into these systems that people have on their hip? Because, you know, I think you look at studies, there's a large percentage of the population that have cell phones with them that pretty much know where they're located at. So, you know, if we could develop a partnership where we could identify a threat area and pop a message right to a person's hip or to the bedstand and ring the phone ringer at them, that's a way that we might be able to expand our reach in working in partnership with the private industry and providing them opportunities for job growth.